Hi, I'm Bonnie Landry, and welcome to Make Joy Normal. With my co-hosts, Celia Smith and Christina, and the guests we have on our show, we would like to share the opportunity to walk with you while you try to make joy normal in your own life. We're so grateful for all the listeners and for all the questions and the comments that we get on our show. We're just so thankful that you are tuning in and you have a desire to make joy normal in your own life. As part of your daily walk, we hope that we can support you in this. We ask that if this has been valuable to you, that you share, like, or leave us a review. That's how we get the word out so that we can help others make joy normal too.
Good morning, Bonnie.
You are well?
I am. I have almost 1 year old. Luke will be one.
That went by quick.
Okay. I know. It went by really slow at the beginning because it was just so hard to get used to having three kids. Yeah. But the last few months have just whizzed by, and he is walking and climbing and doing all the things. So all my boys have walked before one, and I'm very thankful for that because it does make my life. I know a lot of people don't like their kids getting mobile, but I think it makes my life easier because they have so much more freedom. They are able to play more freely, and they just love that. And it also helps him. Yeah, and he can be more like his brothers and play with them better and all those things. I mean, he's still like in the Frankenstein walking stage, you know, where he puts his arms up.
I love that.
But by the time he's 13 months, he'll be a pro. So
when is his birthday? I don't actually remember.
Huh? Oh, March 22nd.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So he's really, really close and just so sweet, so cute. So his own little person. And I feel like this has been one of the hardest years of motherhood for me just because of the big adjustment to three kids.
Suddenly you're outnumbered, right?
That's yes. Number one. And I think I've heard that from a lot of people. I mean, it still wasn't as hard as my first year of motherhood. Nothing could top that. Definitely one of the more challenging years for me. Yeah. And I've been so grateful for my husband and his just willingness to, sacrifice, give up so many mornings where he could have been, you know, doing his normal morning routine, instead getting up super early with Luke and making sure that I got the sleep that I needed and the rest that I needed. And I wish sometimes that we still lived in villages in little huts and had women around us all day who could help us with our children. I really do. Sometimes I long for that.
And also just walking through the same stages of life that we're walking through, like just to know you're not alone is so important. I gave a retreat, a little mini retreat here a few weeks ago, and it was all Catholic homeschooling moms. And there was a huge response to it. There was a lot of people here.
Was that the one that you posted on YouTube?
I
listened to that. It was so good.
But it was interesting. Oh, thank you. What was the coolest part was the fact that the moms were gathering and not feeling alone. And I had several moms say to me, I thought I was the only one.
Oh, right? Yeah. It's so easy to think that.
And I thought, why? You know, it's a disease, thinking we're the only one, because we're not seeing it, right? We're just not seeing it. And we would have seen it in the village situation, right? And living side by side.
Yeah. And even 50 years ago, I was just thinking about how I'm pretty sure I'm the only stay-at-home mom in my neighborhood, because I never see other women with their kids during the day. And even on the most beautiful day, like, there's nobody out there. Yeah. I think it's because most people are dual income and either by choice or by necessity. And so it's a very lonely thing, because there was a time when that was not the case, and where all the moms would have been home. And, you know, even if they were sending their kids to school, they would see each other and have coffee together or whatever. You know, in so many ways, I think one of the reasons why I love reading Little House on the Prairie books is because sometimes I feel as isolated as Ma was when she was taking care of her family in the middle of the prairie, you know?
Well, when you have to load all your little kids into a car to go visit somebody, like, that's a killjoy for sure.
Right? It is, especially if you have a baby who hates the car seat and is just going to cry the entire time, which totally keys up your nervous system and makes you stressed out the entire drive. And all the other kids are like, why is the baby crying?
My mom, when I was growing up, my mom lived on a street where the majority of the women were stay-at-home moms. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what would happen. They would get the kids off to school, and then one of them would just come and knock on the other's door. Hey, you want a coffee? And that was kind of how they started their day. And I thought, you know, what a cool thing. Like, what a cool thing. Just sort of had at least, you know, half a dozen neighbors. And then there's some older ladies whose kids were grown or whatever, but they were part of that as well. And what a beautiful thing to be able to tap into their wisdom and resources, right?
Yeah. I know. It's,
you know, they can just tell you to relax, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a totally different world now. Yeah. And I'm so thankful for the friends I have who live in a short driving distance that I can go see them or we can meet up and it's not a huge ordeal.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of women who don't have that, you know, like their closest friends or meetup or whatever, it's going to be like a 30-minute, 45-minute drive. And that is, it's a lot of time in the car with little kids. So anyway, overall, I'm doing well. Praise God.
So a few months ago now, I feel so bad that we didn't get to this yet, but I had...
But I got erased.
You tried, yeah. I had a mom listener submit some really, really good questions. And you and I in January recorded the episode responding to her questions. And it was a really great episode. And I just felt so good about it. And about 3/4 of the way through it, I realized I had not pressed the record button. So that was very frustrating. We had a great visit. It was a great conversation.
It was a good conversation.
Anyway, so to my mom listener, I'm so sorry it's taken so long to get to these questions. And I'm just going to make a general apology here. Because the last year has been pretty, I'm almost, you know, approaching a year to when my dad died and my daughter got really, really sick at the end of the year and whatnot. So we've had a tough year for sure. And I know that there were emails and questions that fell through the cracks. So I'm so sorry to any listeners that I did not respond to. There was just so much upheaval this year, but please, if I have not responded to your question, resubmit it because I really do love to respond to those. And it was just that year. And so should we dive into those questions first?
Sure. So there was a mom who her English is her second language, and she really wants to homeschool her children. She has, I think she said 4. Her oldest is 5. And so she started out trying to homeschool her 5-year-old when she was 4. Right. And with like math and reading and stuff like that. And at first she was really excited. Then she started to resist. So then she thought, okay, why don't I just put her in public school for 1 year, see how it goes.
Right.
And her daughter really loves the social aspects of school.
Right.
Mom is concerned about the things being taught in the public schools, understandably, and does not want to continue down that path. And she's really drawn to your style of homeschooling, the more relaxed kind of organic style, I guess, but is intimidated about whether or not she can do it because English is her second language and where to start. Right. You know, should she buy a set of encyclopedias? Should she get a curriculum for reading? Should she, you know, what should she do if she's trying to kind of ease into this and help her daughter and like not break down her relationship with her daughter because she feels like she did damage to the relationship when she was trying to push the preschool stuff. Her daughter was 4 and she doesn't want to repeat that. So that was the gist of her question.
Yeah. So there's a lot there. So, and I know that there will be episodes that, maybe Maurice can dig up for me that will have dealt with some of these things, maybe a little more thoroughly, but let's maybe start with how to start, right? Because we want to start off on the right foot. We want, I would first of all recommend don't even use the word school or homeschool. Just don't even use those words. If the daughter hasn't got a reference point for what that looks like, it may not serve the purpose of doing this. Like, let's sit down and do our schoolwork. I wouldn't even go there. I would just be inclined to play, right? Honestly, for the next couple of years. Yep. So I think play is such a vital, vital part of learning, play and reading. And I think that in that we can start addressing teaching the child to attend simply by having opportunities where we have sort of more intentional kinds of play. Like, let's make some Play-Doh. Let's sit down and play Play-Doh together. Or do you want to come and do a puzzle with me? And without ever saying anything to her, you could even have that be at a certain time of day. Like, after breakfast, do you want to have your mummy time with me? And just spend literally 5 or 10 minutes just doing something that creates a space for us doing something lovely together, right? Because ultimately, homeschooling can be something lovely together. And so I would recommend starting to do that first and not push it. If she doesn't want to do it, don't push that issue. No, I want you to come and sit with me and play. No, don't push that. But keep kind of seducing the child, in a sense. Yeah. Pick something that's attractive enough that she wants to come and do that with you, whether that's baking cookies or whether that's playing Play-Doh or whether that's reading stories or whatever. There's a lot of things. Just tap into what your child likes to do and create a kind of a time in your mind that's sort of intentionally set aside for that, so that you start to get into a habit of sitting down together and doing something.
An invitation to play. Like, not,
exactly,
we're going to sit down and do school, but I'd love for you to come play with me. That is so much more appealing for a child.
And then you start to create a space. And then from there, once that space is really safe and created and you're both really enjoying it and whatever, you know, then you could start doing things like, you could start making letters out of Play-Doh if you wanted, or you could start bringing a story. Maybe you play something for a few minutes, a puzzle or a Play-Doh or Lego or whatever they love, or baking, and then get some books, right, that maybe go along with that thing, or just books that she loves, and then start reading a story at that time, so that you're creating maybe 10 or 15 minutes that you just do. And I would absolutely establish that kind of minutes of intentional play first, right? And then I'll talk about the language aspect of this later on, but then the reality is that the invitation to sort of do a little bit more as they get older is just such a natural thing to do because of where you already are. All kids at some point will want to learn to read, right? Because they know that that opens a world for them. Now, the age that happens is hugely spread out between, 3 and 10, right, that they really want to learn to read, but they will. And so I would say not any curriculum at this point, not any having instructions from routine in your day. And I would say that also would go for something like a mealtime. You know, sit down, have meals, have them help up, clear up with the meals, establish some time that you go outside every day. And just a light routine, right? This is what we do. Kids like to know what to expect. And that really aids you later on as you're trying to sort of accomplish more. Your day already has a structure and routine to it, right? Very light. Don't be attached to it. If you want to do something else, or if the child says, oh, I really want to work on this project, great. You know, if they have an hour, if they have the bandwidth to work on something for an hour, whether it's coloring or whatever, let them do that. And when we're done that, then we'll have our lunch and then we'll do a little tidy up. And then, you know, so be attached, hold it loosely, so that you don't get fixated on that, right? Concurrent with that, if a child has already been to school and they see the social life there, now for some kids that will send them running, yes, please homeschool me, because the social life is stressful or difficult or too much for them or exhausting or whatever. I mean, I think it's exhausting for most kids, but some kids kind of get very jazzed by it, right? And some kids are very put off by it. I would say concurrent with establishing a routine for your day that just includes some intentional play, I would suggest really strongly that you start to create play spaces so that you have people over. Maybe that's just one mm-hmm. friend or a couple of friends, but that you either meet at a park. And we do that on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Or the younger your kids are, in a sense, the more frequently you should do mm-hmm. that, because they just sort of desire it more. And as their siblings get older, they have lots of playtime with their siblings. But when you have a 5-year-old and then, a couple of little ones, they are kind of craving playtime, right? So if you can have another family over, go to another family's house that you click with, or meet at a park, which is something you've just recently mm-hmm. been doing with some other moms, that they start to create a social life that actually is deeper and more meaningful than the sort of fire hose of kids that happens
every single day
at school. Most kids, it's pretty exciting, but most kids would prefer one or two or three kids that they kind of really connect with, and they get into sort of, especially at that age, really get into kind of deep games that go on and on. So every time they get together, they play this game again, right? And there's something really beautiful about that.
And they're all still connected to their families, and it's always in the context of family that they are in that social, playtime. I mean, I feel like that's super important too, because even little kids, like 6-year-olds, can become peer oriented and like get detached in some ways from their family and oriented toward their peers. And that can cause a lot of issues. I mean, I've known parents who've taken their kids out of school for that reason, because their kids just got so sucked in by the other kids, and their behavior started to change. They started using all this language that they weren't using, and they were, that can happen. So I love that when I get together with my mom friends and there's other kids, it's like, we're all together. There's never this time when it's, Lord of the Flies, like all the kids are by themselves and they're,
and just not knowing what's going on there, because the child to adult ratio is so disparate,
Yes.
So this is an interesting thing, because I get a lot of questions from Hispanic moms. It's really interesting that there seems like I have a lot of Hispanic followers, which kind of surprises me, because I'm so white, so North American, I don't even have any reference point for Hispanic culture, really.
Well, you are Catholic.
Because I'm Catholic, yes. But because it's not something in this part of Canada and few parts of Canada, Hispanic culture is just not part of our life, right? And so it's a bit foreign to me. Yeah, except that I'm Catholic. Mm-hmm. I was talking to one of these moms who reached out, and a lot of the questions are about attachment and cohesive family life and all of that. And she suggested that may be because the parenting in Hispanic culture tends to be very authoritarian. Children, kind of seen, not heard, kind of perhaps. More how things were. I mean, I think things still are like that in Canada and the U.S. largely, but I think more like it was maybe in the 50s and 60s.
Yes.
That children are kind of marginalized.
It's true.
A little bit. And moms, I think, who are really, really into their faith, realize that this is probably not what God wanted, right? This is probably not what God imagined for children. Certainly the gospel message is not marginalized children, right? Or be hard on children. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that that's a world that I'm being exposed to, but that the moms are finding their way to me and sharing information amongst, their peers and whatnot. And I'm so grateful for that. And I just, you know, keep coming, right? Keep coming, because this is where we have to know other people to know and spread the word of attachment, you know, amongst your own communities. If you go to a church that's largely Hispanic or live in an area that's largely Hispanic, please, you know, share what you are doing, even if it's not even in words, just in the actions, and reach out for support, because it's such a beautiful thing. And that's how the culture will change, right? That's how, you know, my own yeah. culture within, you know, the people that I know, those of us who practice attachment, recognize that we had a big impact on the culture around us, not because we were preaching it, because we're doing it, right? And people want to know how, why, you know, why is this not working? Why is my kids giving me flack or whatever? So anyway, that's a tangent.
Yeah.
But I hope it's okay to say, like, I hope that's just okay to say that. I could be wrong about.
There are secular groups of Hispanic parents who are trying to do that, trying to change the culture of Hispanic parenting to make it more respectful. But I don't see that. I mean, I don't know of anything like that in the Catholic world. It's very similar to, you know, there's like this whole gentle parenting thing or respectful parenting, whatever, in the secular world.
I don't know why it's taking so long to get traction in the Catholic world.
I think there's just a lot of attachment, no pun intended, to these ideas from the past of like authority equals respect equals, and respect equals children never questioning their parents, never saying, you know, and authority as a parent means your children do what you say the first time all the way. I think there's just so much influence, honestly, on American Catholicism, I'm sure Canadian too, of the Protestant way of thinking about children.
Yeah.
It's not anywhere in the church's teaching. So, you know, it's definitely not coming from the church per se. Although I've heard priests, I have very close relatives and friends who've priests have told them, you must spank your children if you want them to grow up and be respectful children, you know? And I'm just like, what? It's like, that's what, like when a pediatrician tells you how you should parent. The pediatrician is not a parenting expert. They are an expert in childhood diseases. A priest is not a parenting expert either.
I just want to address the language question for a moment, because this comes up a lot as well. I've received a lot, not just from Spanish speaking families, but from French Canadian families, right? I've had a lot of questions about that. Is French is our first language. How do I, if I want my kids to maintain the French, but also be fluent in English, how do I address that? Now I'm not bilingual. Okay. So I'm going on watching children for years and years and years, learn language and how that can work. And my husband is French Canadian, and he did not speak French to our kids, which is sad because his French was already, he moved out of French community when he was 10. And so it was already getting challenging for him.
But he grew up with the French as his first language.
But his mom, his parents are both a Francophone. His mom only spoke French to them. His dad only spoke English to them because he felt English was the new way of the world. So they grew up sort of completely bilingual. If Albert's around French speaking people, he's tracking, and he will improve his French, right? Like when we traveled in France, just being around it all the time, a lot of vocabulary comes back, right? It's all in his brain, but it's hard to access. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah.
That said, I, you know, it's something that we regret. We wish that we had introduced French, and Albert realizes if he had, it probably wouldn't have taken a lot of effort to have our kids have some foundation in French. So one of the ways that we know that people have successfully done that is by reading storybooks in both languages, having a good selection of Spanish storybooks, French storybooks, English storybooks, and read them, like really good ones, so that you want to read them, so that your kids want to read them, and make sure, even I would suggest something like equal. And if the kids are resisting one language or the other, I would say, let's read this one, then we'll read whatever language they prefer, mm-hmm. right? Keep them short, keep them really short.
Sorry, you can get a lot of like Tommy DePaola's books, almost all of those are translated into Spanish. It's kind of amazing how many books there
are. And beautiful stories and Catholic stories. What a great What a great way. Yeah. So, and then some that are written in those languages traditionally as well would be, I think, a really good idea, so that you're getting the best of the best, right? And not always translations. So I think that that's certainly one of the things that we can do. I would also recommend that, you know, if she's five, don't start reading right now. Don't start pushing reading right now. You can point out letters on the page if she's okay with that. If she resists that, wait. Or you can look at the sounds of things or look at her own name or whatever. But if she's resistant, just wait. It will come, right? Just wait it out. You could even point things out in some of the differences in language as you're reading the books. So especially a translation, like when you look at a word that's similar, like family, familia, you know, look at the word that's similar, like, oh, look at that. Just point it out. Right? That look how similar they are. You could go back and forth with that. And I would point things out about the language, but don't burden them. Only do it as often as the child is sort of interested and willing. If they resist, like, stop doing that. Just read the books, right? But something that to come back to occasionally and just sort of see if they, it catches their interest, see when it catches their interest. And, but in terms of reading, I would recommend that as you approach reading, do dictation and do it, go back and forth again, like with the storybooks, go back and forth, do it in Spanish or French and English, back and forth, so that your child is getting reading, hearing, visually seeing, writing, all the, that's why the beauty of dictation is that it encompasses all of the senses and all of the ways that we learn. And we should really pull that in. And what a beautiful way to address the language, because a lot of times when kids are bilingual, they don't write or read necessarily or speak in one of the languages. So they, writing in particular has been the one that's kind of stood out, that people have mentioned that they can read and speak this language, but they can't really write it very well, right? Like they could probably make basic sentences, but if they were going to write a letter, they would choose one language or the other, the one that they're stronger in, because we tend to, when we're bilingual, tends to be speaking and reading. What a beautiful way to introduce them to language. And so I would suggest even having, you could do it in the same book or have two different books, like, oh, today we're going to do Spanish, today we're going to do English, and use sources that are really attractive in those particular languages, right? I've recommended lots of poetry books that are in English. I don't know of any Spanish poetry, but it could be Bible verses. It could be nursery rhymes. I'm assuming, like in French and in English, that there are children's rhyme and children's stories and whatnot, that the original language is Spanish. I would tend to use those with a second language, right?
I actually have bilingual sister-in-law, and my brother is also bilingual, and they are raising their children bilingual. And beautiful. All that you're saying is, I mean, they are not homeschooling, but they really focus. They only speak Spanish in the home, and their attitude is outside of the home, they'll get English. They'll get a lot of English, but they won't get Spanish outside the home. So they really try to preserve that in the home. And then supplement with, you know, they obviously, they're kind of looking to school to get the English solidified. But I don't think that that's impossible to do in a homeschool environment at all, especially if you're having regular meetups with people, with other families who aren't Spanish speaking. Your kids are going to really pick up on that too. Like, if you have friends who are English speaking, there's going to be, you're going to get a lot of exposure to English. Yeah. If you live in a super insular community where you don't speak Spanish, you know, that's different.
Yeah. I had one mom who I thought this was really a neat idea for a certain part of the day. I think she said while they were doing their homeschooling, she would speak English. That was the agreement she made with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
We would speak English while we're doing our learning. And this is obviously, for this child, if you're just doing play, you could, again, do that at some point in the day. Like, for the first hour of the day, I'm going to speak English, and then we can speak Spanish for the rest of the day, right?
Yeah.
So that's not only good for the child, it's good for the mom if she's looking to improve her English skills. But I also think dictation is just such an incredibly good platform to be learning English alongside your child. So if you're going back and forth, it's a guarantee that you're going to learn English alongside your child. You're going to improve your English alongside your child. You're going to understand English punctuation, English grammar, all of these things so much better because you're learning alongside them. And there's no shame in that. Like that, the dictation that I did early on, the first couple of years, I had to have a book sitting beside me because I didn't remember the rules from when I learned them at school. A lot of them we know innately because we're English
speaking. Yeah, it's just intuitive at some
point. I was double checking everything. And there's some great, I've got a lot of information on my website, bonnielandry.ca, on dictation. If you just go into the search bar on my website and type dictation, you'll come up with 20 posts where I deal with dictation and I give examples and all of that. I've got dictation videos on my YouTube channel. We've dealt with dictation a deeper dive on this podcast for sure. But it's just the resources, to have resources by you. There's a lot of moms who have like grammar sheets and spelling sheets and punctuation sheets on Etsy that are free that you can just print out and they're free to put up and you can just have them sitting beside you, right? So, you know, the resources available to us are great, and it's just such a great platform for you to learn with your child, right? And no doubt even French-speaking or Spanish-speaking people are going to find that there's things they don't remember from the grammar that they learned in school.
Oh, yeah.
So have those resources in whatever language you're working in, and you know, if it's more than one language, right?
I actually went to, when in high school, I took like an honors Spanish 3 class, and there were a couple of Spanish speakers in my class who were raised, their parents were from Spain, so they were raised in a bilingual home. Their grammar and spelling was so bad that I actually got better grades than them in a lot of the tests because I was, you know, the little like straight A girl who studied everything and got it all right. I mean, I could not speak as well as they could. I could not read as well as they could, but I had better spelling and grammar than they did. Because,
isn't that interesting? And I mean, it makes sense because we often learn a language by learning kind of grammar rules first, which I don't necessarily agree with that approach or think is the best approach, but it's usually where we start.
Right. And that's not how you learn a language organically when you're a kid. You learn it by just listening and speaking. And then later you're like, oh, there's rules. Interesting. But in English, there's a lot of rules that then have exceptions. And I mean, I do not envy anyone who has to learn English as a second language because...
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Oh my gosh. It's so hard. And it would be... The Latin languages, Latin-based languages are so much more logical. They make so much more sense. The spelling, well, maybe not French, but Italian and Spanish definitely make more sense phonetically, grammatically. Everything makes more sense than English.
And well, then most of the letters only make one sound, right? Or this combination of letters only makes one sound. And so it's so refreshing, you know, when we compare it alongside English. So it's like, you know, E can pretty much say any vowel sound, right?
I know. Or it could say nothing. It could say nothing. Or there could be nothing. No sound. The silent letters. I mean, that's kind of a French, I guess in French, there's silent letters too, but
yeah. English combination, I find the combinations of vowels in French really hard to remember. Yes. I mean, I suppose once you know them that, you know, these two or three vowels say this and
There's also things you have to do with your tongue. Like that's another thing I think about languages that you don't think about is the mechanics of the language. If you're not,
it's much more complicated.
Your mouth hasn't formed from a young age to make certain sounds, it's going to be a lot harder to make the sounds, which is why we have accents, you know, in foreign languages, because our mouths just can't make the sounds that a native speaker can make,
Exactly.
So anyway.
So I think we addressed most of those things. Except resistance. So maybe that's something that we should just talk about, kind of resisting. Well, I mean, we sort of on a from the back door, I think we addressed it in the sense that, you know, creating a space for play and making that an invitation and making it very like avoiding the top down. I'm going to teach you this today, right? Allow it come from the bottom up, allow it to come from the child. because it will come. And there's a certain amount of trust, a lot of trust that has to happen in order for that to be something we can be relaxed about. But I would say in this case, she's 5, maybe she's 6 now because it took so long for me to get to the question, that for the next couple of years, just let that unfold naturally. And, you know, if she gets to be 8 or 9 and she's still not showing an interest in reading or not reading, then there's things that we can do to sort of encourage and lead that are maybe going to be a little more intentionally working towards reading. But be very relaxed about learning. Be very, you know, just create a rich environment for your child to learn in. And they will, in general, they will just take to that. So, you know, just be patient and allow the joy and the fun of learning to just come from the child, right? Because children are naturally scientists. They naturally want to know things and learn things. And it might not be letters right now. Eventually it will be. But it might not be letters or numbers right now. So let it be what it is that they're interested in. Because say, for example, they're interested in bugs or dinosaurs or, you know, whatever it is, rockets, cars. Eventually they're going to want to read on their own about the things that they love. And they know that that door is there and they can access it. And there's whole libraries full of books on the things that they love. So it will come. And I would say just treat that with a very, very light hand. Like let the learning come from them, go with what they're interested in. Encyclopedias. Yeah, I think encyclopedias are a fantastic thing to get for your child. As far as I know, I could be wrong about this, but as far as I know, World Book is actually only making the only hard copy. And I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again because it's so worth mentioning. If you buy a brand new set of World Book encyclopedias, it might cost you $1,500 to $2,000 new from the World Book website. If you buy last year's or the year before's, they will drop significantly, sometimes even a quarter of the price, a third of the price, especially if you look for a sale like Black Friday or something like that. And you're still getting a brand new encyclopedia, but it's a year or two old. You can also buy used sets, often for a song. You'll find a 20-year-old set or a 15-year-old set of encyclopedias that I personally favor World Book. And our kids just spent hours and hours and hours, even if they can't read yet, looking at the pictures, like the horse section or the rocket section or the Canada section or whatever, because they're very visually pleasing. Mm-hmm. And so even before they could read, our kids would spend a lot of time in encyclopedias. Also great visual books. So a used set might cost you $50, $100, $200, but check out what's available online first. Cause when they're offloading those brand new ones, sometimes really worth the $500, $600.
Also, if you get on a, like if there's a local Facebook, homeschoolers group.
Yeah.
You can get free things, or if you're part like of an email listserv, I've gotten free Usborn science encyclopedias, yeah. And things like that from homeschooling parents whose kids are graduating and they don't need the books anymore and they're still in really good shape. And I mean, my 6-year-old yesterday was like, Mommy, can we read about, I want to learn more about organs. Can we read about the circulatory yeah. system and the digestive system? And so I just read him what he wanted to read. And, you know, they're definitely not written for 6-year-olds, but I, you know, he told me when he was like, okay, that's enough. Let's move on to the next one, you know? And so we might not have read everything, but that was all he wanted to learn. And I'm so thankful for the parents who are donating, like offering mm-hmm. these things to yeah. new homeschooling parents and kind of passing along the wealth because and, I haven't had a buy-in.
Yeah, it's awesome. And yeah, we should be grateful for parents willing to do that. I know I've offloaded a lot of stuff to my own kids, but also to others. Just, you know what, we're not using this anymore. And we've got 2 copies of it and we don't need it anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's really awesome to be able to do that. Books, of course, there's other ways to build a rich learning environment, but books are our number one thing. And so for pre-readers, visual books are great. Usborn books, eyewitness mm-hmm. books. It's just great to have a lot of visually stimulating books around, and to also take your kids, you know, go out for walks and talk about what you're seeing, right? I mean, you know what kids are like, right? They'll stop and watch a caterpillar cross the road, you know, for 15 minutes, mm-hmm. right? And you're kind of thinking, okay, like to get a little walking in, but you know,
we're more oriented toward destination, and they're so much more oriented toward the actual journey yeah. part, you know,
yeah. and we can learn so much from that. That's beautiful. Yeah. So did you have any other questions besides this?
You answered a lot of them by what you were saying, because I think even though I fancy myself pretty confident in letting my son sort of lead the way at this age, he's only six, I still get, I can still be influenced by people who yeah. are like, oh, your child should be doing this by this time, and you need to have a formal curriculum for reading and math. And, you know, I think I might, I mean, I definitely will eventually get a formal curriculum for math, because I am not strong in math, and I don't think I can give my...
It's always my first curriculum, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I can give my, especially this guy, my oldest, he is very into math and very naturally gifted in it, and I can't give him what he needs. But with like reading, I feel like we're on our way. It's just a very organic and slow process, and there's no rush, because I think we have a very rich learning environment in my home. And so, you know, I think in some ways he's doing quote kindergarten level work, and some ways he's doing like third grade level stuff, you know, and it's like, who cares?
I know. Yeah. We just have to just toss the measuring sticks. Yeah.
I was starting to be like, oh, should I get a reading curriculum? You know, so I have like a lesson to do every day. Once in my mind, I didn't want to start anything formal until he's seven, because to me, that's like, especially for boys, it's the age of reason. It's an age when historically children started attending school, more formal school. I am so that what we're doing at home every day, which is still so driven by his interests, you know, like we made a parachute the other day because he really wanted to have a parachute for one of his toys to like throw off the treehouse. And so we did a parachute, and we did, you know, we were like doing tangrams, that little square that you divide in all the different shapes in it. And so like, we're doing a lot of really cool stuff and reading aloud every day, and we have a rhythm and a routine, but it doesn't look like a lot of homeschooling that I see kind of in the internet, on the internet world, like, you know, the sit down and do the lesson every day and all that. And so I think sometimes I get a little nervous. Like, am I doing the best I can for my kid, or am I just taking the lazy way out? That it's very easy to get to be susceptible to marketing and also to be susceptible to insecurity, especially with your first, when you want everything to go so well, and you know that in some ways they're the guinea pig, and you can't really help that completely. Yeah.
You know, and anytime you're feeling, you know, tempted by whatever the internet is offering, I'll just talk you off the ledge.
And that's why I come to you, because I'm like, I know Bonnie will have something wise to tell me. And I already decided I need to reread The 3 R's, because that book gave me so much peace and so much confidence that I could do, you know, K-3 at least without a formal curriculum.
Yes.
So I need to reread that book, and then I need to go look at your dictation book again. And I mean, Joseph's loves to, he's it. Memorizing rhyming books, and he loves to like look at the line that he has memorized and say, oh, look, that's all the words that I'm saying, and I can read it, you know, and it's like very exciting.
Yeah. And also that's one of the, it's one of the lead-ins to reading, when they memorize stuff and then they recognize the words that they're memorizing, they're, you know, starting to get some sight words, right?
Yes, exactly. He has a lot of sight words, actually. It's the phonics that we haven't really worked on in a whole, like on a mango. Yes, that's the name of your little cat. I think that's the thing that I'm a little nervous about. Like, am I giving him enough of a phonetic education, right. You know, but
dictation takes
time. And that's what I keep thinking about, like dictation. Okay. Dictation is all we need. And if there are any issues, then we can bring in something more formal, but I don't think he's going to need more than that. I just have an intuition that he won't, you know, maybe some of my other boys down the line will. I'm so thankful to have you as a mentor because you keep me from getting sucked in to that way of thinking.
I might have to wrap up here just because my voice is going, but and it looks like your people would like to have you back now.
Yes, they would. Trying to sing you one of his poems. Okay, can you say it louder?
Okay.
Wake up.
Wake up, chicken and beans. Bacon in the bed, coffee in the bucket of nugget.
So he said, wake up, Jakin, days of breaking, frying pans on and cornbread's baking, bacon in the pan, coffee in the pot, get up now and get it while it's hot. That's from a book called Bring Me Some Apples and I'll Bake You a Pie.
That's awesome. And
my boys love dancing around and singing that.
Yeah.
So.
Here's the one that goes
for Okay, wait. We're going to say goodbye to Bonnie. Okay. Bye, Bonnie. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Take care.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.